Hi everyone, and welcome back to another Sunday Roast. We are here again with two wonderful guests. I will start with Aid. Aid, can you tell us a bit about yourself for anyone who's new to the show?
Sure. First up, thanks for having me. I'm Aid Thompson. I'm a podcast host. I do the alternative paper review most mornings on YouTube. And broadly, I'm an internet bastard.
And everyone's favorite man abroad, Ol Shores, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
What are you talking about yourself then? Well, I escaped the UK back in 2009. I've been living there ever since in France, sort of central France. I was happily working here, and then Brexit happened, and it just kind of put a spanner in the works. And I don't know how it kind of happened. I started doing YouTube videos about Brexit and politics and stuff, and that ain't even my background. I'm a woodworker, for Christ's sake. You know, I make stuff out of wood, and now I'm doing make videos about Richie Sunak and Nigel Farage,
some pretty saucy ones as well. So I would recommend
my woodwork videos you talk about. You see that? Oh, no, I tagged you in it, didn't I?
And my wonderful co-host Alex, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
Hi, my name's Alex. I'm also known as Political X. I'm a YouTuber, a journalist, a historian, teacher, and my wonderful co-host, Max. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Max. I run the Rubberspear channel, where I talk about British politics and Brexit in particular. So it's been a pretty crazy week as the general election has been unfolding. Aid, is there anything in particular that you'd like to highlight this week that was really out there?
Yeah, so there's two key moments for me over the last few days. The first one was Reform polling ahead of the Conservative Party, I think, for the first time. I think it was only one poll from memory, although by the time this goes out, it's possible it may have increased to two or three. I mean, this is something that's happened not out of nowhere, but it feels overnight because Farage has only just returned back, right? So they're kind of petering along about 14, 15%. Then he's returned. And now it appears that they've made that, but and now they're sort of in turn kind of remarketing the rhetoric that the Conservative Party would have traditionally, where they go, don't vote for Reform because that's a waste and then you'll get Labour. And now what Reform are doing is then pushing that same rhetoric back out, going, don't vote for the Tories, that's a wasted vote, vote for us now if you don't want Labour. So I think that's a real kind of a pinch point in this campaign. And I see that over the last few days as kind of on a par with this ongoing in development scandal of Tories placing bets on the date of the election to win what, like £200 or like £300?
Yeah. So for people, I'll just give a quick bit of context for anyone who doesn't know. There are two Tory individuals, one a candidate for Parliament and another who's, I believe, a permanent secretary to Rishi Sunak, who allegedly placed bets on the election date a few days before Rishi Sunak launched the campaign. So it's possible that there's insider trading going on there, which I believe is illegal. No, it is illegal.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're not supposed to make financial bets based on information that isn't out in the public domain, right? And I mean, the thing that wilds me out about this is, like, you know, these are people who are on salaries of 80, 90, 120,000 pounds, and yet they just can't help themselves to take that information. Oh, I could make an extra couple of hundred here.
Yeah, but you can never have enough, these people.
Yeah.
When they got money, you know, they start living to their means and that, and they get scared that they're going to lose it.
Well, they've got to pay for that wine and cheese somehow, haven't they?
Of course. You know, it's the bribes and that as well. Like Scott Benton, we were talking about a minute ago. You know, I can't remember if it was 10 or 20 grand he got in bribes from, was it William? William H. Burnham?
I can't remember what the sham company was that sort of set him up and recorded his interview. But for months before that, I remember looking at his They Work For You page, which is a website you can go on. You can see what the register of interests is for MPs. And I remember looking at the hospitality that he was receiving from the gambling and betting industry lobby. I was like, that's interesting. And whenever he said something like half cheeky or culture war-y on Twitter, I reply back to him with an application form to go and work in Betfair. And then lo and behold, he got busted like lobbying illegally on their behalf. I was like, jackpot!
Bravo.
Thank you. Yeah.
Bravo, that's amazing trolling.
Yes.
Well, you read the future as well, but you didn't need insider information.
Well, I'm becoming something of a Nostradamus these days, Alex. I mean, I sort of half predicted that. I predicted Farage returning at the beginning of the campaign and that he would be greeted like it was the second coming of Jesus.
The more comparisons you make, the more it sounds like Hitler. So Hitler got jailed for attempting a coup. So he went into the wilderness and dropped the party. They begged him back and then he surged ahead in the polls.
Yeah.
But interestingly, he was being also called a messiah by some parts of the German...
Like Daily Mail, wasn't it?
Probably. I found articles in the Daily Mail talking about how much there's a problem with the Jewish population moving into the UK and how much of a threat they are. And that was from the 30s. Shock. Sorry, go ahead, Aid, talking about this angelic return and all the... What were the other predictions you made?
What else have I... Oh, Joey Barson said something that I interpreted as libelous about Jeremy Vine. This was about 3 or 4 months ago. I remember quote tweeting that and saying, like, Joey Barton is about to learn a really difficult lesson in libel law that could cost him as little as £100,000.
Yeah, or go to jail, just like Alex Belfield.
Exactly. And
who's, could you tell our audience who Alex Belfield is?
Alex Belfield, he's used to be a radio DJ, I remember, rightly, I think it was on the BBC actually. At one time, they got rid of him quite quick because obviously his views. And then he started his own podcast, but also on YouTube. Was it The Voice of Reason, I think it was called at the time. And he's just another one of these hard right nut jobs. I mean, his ideals and the hate that he'd and division he's trying to cause. And it's anyway, what happened was he ended up trolling. I think it was Jeremy Vine, wasn't it? And two others. And he's found guilty and he got 5 years.
Yeah.
He got 5 years. He got fined.
He got 5 years. Yeah.
I think they get fined in addition to that. Like, I mean, you have to pay the court costs to the person that you were harassing and all that. But at the time when I was saying the stuff about Barton, I had loads of his fans and all of the alt-right community, all of the free speech ultras going like, no, he could say whatever he likes. You know, you don't know anything about libel law. Are you a lawyer? No, you're not. And I'm like, I can't imagine a situation where a high profile person like Jeremy Vine getting called a, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say, a bike N, not that N word, different N word. Like, it rhymes with Ponce. Bike.
Right.
I was like, I can't imagine a situation where somebody that high profile who gets called that on Twitter to millions of followers like Barton commands on that platform, how that wouldn't result in legal action for defamation. And so, then, lo and behold.
People. Yeah, like if somebody with like 3 followers does this, it's not worth the while like responding. Sure. But if somebody like this guy who did it has a huge number of followers, I don't know why he has a huge number of followers. I've never heard of the guy until I saw this scandal. But like, what's going through? I presume because he's pretty high profile, he has a lot of money. He probably has a lawyer. Does a lawyer not call him up on a Monday morning and go, what the hell are you doing? Look, I'm happy to make lots of money out of this, but you should really tone it down.
Well, it's have you heard about Andrew Bridgen? He wants to take Matt Hancock to court for defamation of character.
But you have to have a character first, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. Oh, crikey. And potato head.
Well, if we're going to go in this route, we'll slightly go into America. We're going to do a bit more America later, but Alex Jones is up the creek over Sandy Hook. He's been finally done in, broke down on TV, conspiracy theorist. He's a bit of a Nostradamus. If you didn't know, he actually predicted 9/11 about a year or two before it happened. Did you guys know that?
I didn't know.
Predicted
that.
It accurately. Did you know that? No, yeah, I'm not making this up. I'll play the clip at some point. Like, I'll play it in the show later.
If any terrorism comes, it's from this government. And if there was an outside threat like a bin Laden, who was a known CIA asset in the 80s, running the Mujahideen War, and whose family builds all the military bases over in Saudi Arabia right now, and sits on the board of Iridium Satellite, he's the boogeyman they need in this Orwellian phony system. We know the Joint Chiefs of Staff wanted to blow up airliners, Baltimore Sun. If you do it, we're going to blame you because we know who's up to it. Or if you let some terrorist group do it, like the World Trade Center, we know who to blame.
What's the outcome from that? Because obviously he got taken down off YouTube, remember, didn't he?
Demonetized on YouTube, I think.
Demonetized on YouTube.
I don't know if he got banned.
But I think he did temporarily, didn't he? He got took down for a bit and come back again. But all these conspiracy outlet or something called, don't they? That's like get shut down now.
Well, they've gone after over this. He owed originally. It was didn't the court say it's like $1 billion, something astronomical?
1.5, I think.
Was it? Because and just for the benefit of anyone who's not that familiar with him, he was the guy who suggested that the mourning parents of dead kids after the Sandy Hook massacre that they could or were crisis actors. And so all of these, Southern state nut jobs who follow InfoWars and take his word as gospel were then harassing these families who were just trying to, endure and absorb this horror that's happened to them. And now on top of all of that, they got to deal with these nut jobs, phoning their houses, accusing them of being crisis actors as well. And so, as part of the compensation and to reflect the severity of that nonsense, they fined him 1.5.
And it affects their families as well. You think of Pelosi and what have you, her husband got attacked with a flipping hammer. It's just that it's responsibility and somebody has to take responsibility.
But this is something, and just to bring it back to the Joey Barton and, the Lawrence Foxes and now the Alex Joneses, this is that sort of delicious point where it's like you've got the free speech ultras. I should be able to say anything I like at any time, no matter who it hurts, no matter the repercussions. Yeah. And then at some point, reality comes knocking.
Mm-hmm. Great power comes great responsibility.
But you can say some things, not anything you like, you nutter.
Go on.
So we've got people, haven't we, like Ricky Gervais and what have you, trying to push that line that you can pretty much say whatever you like. And if I upset you, and then so what? And it's although I like Ricky Gervais because he's an animal lover, but I think you have to draw the line somewhere.
You do, but also I quite like the fact that there are individuals out there who are my political adversaries who don't draw a line and who do say legally problematic problems, because my Patreon isn't growing that fast, and I'm just hanging in on Twitter hoping somebody libels me. look at this guy. He's a Mike Ponce.
It's like
podcast Ponce. I'll be cha-ching. Like, oh, thank God, my mortgage is paid off. Amazing stuff. tax free. Well,
do you do stand up, don't you?
Yes.
Paid. So how are you finding it within stand-up, the ability to do free speech? Because I've worked in stand-up, and I noticed that obviously you're limited on what you can say on Twitter, but within a stand-up comedy club, it's slightly different because it's a closed audience, and in theory, no one should be filming.
So I guess, so there's two questions there. The first one is, can you say whatever you like on a stage and be free from repercussions? Probably not, but I don't think that's any worse now than it ever has been. Like the audience are the meter on that. And I've seen people say horrendous stuff on stage.
Oh, like Jim Davidson.
Like Jim Davidson sort of tribute act style people. Mm-hmm. I've seen people get up and think that they are Russell Brand and try to be Russell Brand with a very flowery vocabulary, pushing boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. I've seen white guys get up and drop the N-bomb. But there's always a feedback from the audience that lets you know, maybe not immediately, maybe over the short to medium term, that lets you know whether you can say something like that. And whether it could survive that that medium. So I think you can say pretty much whatever you like on a stage and probably nothing would come of it, but you would learn very quick what was acceptable and what wasn't.
Jimmy Carr used to do that very successfully. So up in Edinburgh on Leighton Live, which is this notorious 2 o'clock show that would happen. We would run our show until 12, be absolutely hammered and stumble in there. And some of the stuff Jimmy Carr used to play there, so this is like we're talking 15 years ago, he would make people cry, which is quite just verbally a random stranger bringing to tears and leaving the audience.
To be clear, making them cry in a good way, or a...
Definitely not. But then we get back to that thing of free speech, don't we? Because I always find that comedy is quite interesting because that's the thing that's testing the line always. Mm. And it's something that you've got to debate over because our use of language... I mean, you know, half the stuff that we say on here, if we were to do that in the Victorian age, probably had the police knocking on our door and taking us away.
Yeah.
Which is only like, 100 years ago.
The example I always go back to is like, so if you look at like End of the Pier, like old school, you know, double acts from the 70s, even further back, like 50s or 60s, sort of comedy, stand-up, vaudeville, musical, that sort of stuff. You'd get an old boy on the stage there with a bow tie and a cane, and he would tell jokes about his mother-in-law because that was shocking. At the time, you'd have like front rows of people going, oh my God, how is he talking about his mother? He's saying such horrendous stuff about his own mother-in-law. He's going to be in so much trouble. And now, you know, anyone that did talk rubbish about their mother-in-law would be in trouble. But the idea of it, the joke, that format, that mechanism is so overdone and hack that it's no longer shocking to us. But there are other things, like as society, as language matures, we find new ways to exercise the same reaction, don't we?
I think I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think it was Matt Green who we had on not that long ago said that it's the audience that has changed, not... So if the comedian doesn't change with the audience, then the comedian is not going to be funny. So it's not so much the comedians have to change. It's they, well, if the audience changes, the audience have different tastes. So you have to cater to the audience now. And while there are still, you know, the elderly people, no offense to elderly people, but the older ones who go to the, you know, Blackpool or whatever, they want a particular type of comedy and they'll get that. But that's not the mainstream.
I suppose they've evolved with the surroundings as well, and how they absorb media. Like, for instance, you've got the short videos now, haven't you? And TikTok and that sort of thing. So it's like that craving for little snippets make me laugh for 2 seconds and it's done. You know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I know a bunch of comedians who put their heart and soul into going around the circuit, desperately trying to build up a following for their particular niche take on what they think stand-up is or should be. And then I've got some other friends who used to love stand-up and they're just like, the scene is just dead. It's just not like it used to be. People are too broke. They don't go out so much. It takes 10 years, 12 years to build a following. Or what you could do is just move on to Shorts or TikTok or YouTube. You can build a name for yourself there. And then gradually over time, you know, I guess the hope is that people would buy tickets off the back of that stuff.
Do you find demographics having to do it as well? Like, first, you go from different areas, what have you. The demographics change regarding the feedback you get from the audience.
Yeah. So I used to do quite well in like East London and, well, just in and around London, really. People are quite switched on. They were of my demographic. They were like young professionals or students. And then I would do like out of town gigs, which paid more. But they're always like in a back room of a pub. And they would be like, you know, old boys, you know, British Legion types. And they're.
Oh. They just don't get it.
Hated me.
They just don't get it.
So hard. But you're there with your like sort of introspective, heady, cerebral poem about why they shouldn't vote UKIP or whatever it was at the time. And they're just sat there like...
I just don't get it.
Eyeballing. Yeah.
How do you find... All shorts, how do you find comedy in France? How do you find free speech in France? Do you notice much of a difference?
It's very regional. The demographics, I mean, like I say, like for the area that we're in here is sort of in the Limousin, there's lots of, well, it's just farming, you know, very rural. And unless you move into the towns and those sort of areas, the opinions changed. I'd like to say comedy seems to change as well. What they see as being funny seems to change. But it's very, it's a right wing area, it really is, you know. But if you speak to like the doctor, you know, she's more, you know, down the middle, and you speak to anyone in like, for instance, in the tax office, because I tell a bit of a chit-chat, and they're more down the middle. But if you speak to the local farmer, it's just like, it's black and white. There's no nuance. There's no lateral thinking going on. They're not just looking at the detail, the effects of all this stuff, that they just do this, and they think that's simple, that's straightforward. I suppose they can really play a field, and, you know, they know that what they do, you know, and obviously they're very good at it. But regarding the effects of everything, like for instance, climate change, for instance, they're not that interested. They're quite blinkered. And we've got some people here that we speak of, our French neighbour, Caroline, just came back from a minute ago, actually. And she's a Frexiter. She is a crikey. The stuff that she comes out with, it's just, it to me, I just find, I don't understand why you believe this, and I think, crikey, I don't get it. It's just so way out there. I won't be surprised she's a flat earther, but she's lovely. Don't get me wrong, she's really nice. She's good to us, man. But her politics are just so out there. And she isn't alone. There's a lot of people here like her, especially in rural France. But obviously, when you talk about demographics in the towns and what have you in the cities, it's different. And it does change. No, they don't want people to go to college because it changes your thinking. Like, even when I went start, when I did my university degree, it just changed the way I looked at stuff. It made me look at things more laterally. Whereas before, I was just, if I wanted to paint something, I didn't know, oh, I don't know, paint, what have you, I mean, because I'm just in my head, I've got this obsession with just, I don't know, replicating a scene instead of actually thinking outside the box and actually thinking, oh, yeah, how can I be imaginative? And that's what university did for me. It opened my mind. And obviously, that's what happens with the youngsters. They go to college, go to the university, what have you, and their minds get opened, and they realize there's nuance to all these so-called policies that might seem straightforward to some people, otherwise it's far more complicated than what they than what it actually is to actually facilitate make it happen. So, for me, I think it's quite difficult, and it's quite difficult to engage because they're actually quite passionate about it as well. A bit like actually a bit like, oh, should I say Gavin?
Do
I
they
got
have
accused of calling someone Gavin the other day. They said I was racist.
the same or a similar sort of tabloid influence in politics over there? Because I always look at that like
It's different here.
disparaging of universities, of institutions, of making young Brits more worldly and engaging critical thought. I always look at the Daily Mail headlines like, our remaining universities. And there's been stuff more recently than that, right? About how universities bring in immigrants and then their families, and then the families stay. And there's this sort of ongoing narrative being woven about educational institutions being problematic or anti-British, or then I guess another example would be the recent coverage that's been about university students being supposedly supportive of Hamas rather than campaigning for peace in Gaza, like that. So there's an ongoing tabloid campaign here to disparage
Yeah,
universities.
it's I
Is there
think
something similar over there?
that there is that's more underground.
Right.
There is I'm not gonna say the dark web, but there is definitely there's an underground news source with all these full of all these conspiracy theories. What I know it goes on everywhere else, goes in the United States as well, but it's regarding a lot of the like online news, a lot of it is subscription based. People what pay do they? So much of it, if you look online, a lot of it is you have to join and maybe pay a little contribution, what have you, to the paper. I think you have to do with Telegraph, don't you? But it's different. It is definitely different. You see, there is responsibility here in that, for instance, if a politician does something wrong, they get locked up. Or like Sarkozy go around with a tag on his ankle because of corruption and what have you. There is a system in place, a legal system that seems to kind of works, and
No,
they
nobody's
get
above the law.
reprimanded. Exactly. Whereas these lot, I was saying to this actually yesterday on my live stream yesterday. I don't feel like, for instance, that any UK political party are getting to power, and they never seem to look backwards or who's been in power before them and say, "Hang on, that was illegal." And it just seems to be like a taboo subject. Well, we know full well what's going on in this Tory party. There's a hell of a lot of very illegal stuff going on. Will Labour actually do anything about it, or will they keep stumpf in fear that maybe that'll be them next time? I don't know.
Well, there's Russia interference, which has been
Yeah.
completely ignored.
Yeah,
Yet,
the Russia
in the
report.
last election, Boris, three occasions on TV, no interference that I've seen, just before the GE. Turns out he was
He didn't
talking
look at it.
bollocks.
If he didn't look at it, did he?
No,
Out
didn't
of
look at
mind.
it and actively avoided looking at it. That's the
Yeah.
difference. It wasn't like, oh, shit, this has happened. It was, no, don't open that box. Don't
Oh, what?
look
Who was it
and
again?
allow it to continue and fester.
Who was
It's
one of
like
the
having a mold problem and just going, I'll just push the sofa in front of it and it'll go away. That is what Homer Simpson would do. That's what
Literally,
our Prime Minister has done. He's done a
it's
Homer.
there. It's not
Wow.
there.
That's the first time I can actually use that. Is that the correct use of the word? I've done a Homer?
That's a very good one, so we'll stick with
Yeah. I mean,
that.
but I want to know, Max, how do you find it in Italy? I mean, this is quite fun finding out how everyone's dealing with it differently.
The world is a village, isn't it? So in Italy, we've always had right wing, left wing media, newspapers, and the traditional media as well. But what really happened was when Berlusconi was in charge, when he took over in the early 1990s, he really put, rocket boosters under it, where you had, in the past, so in the past or also in the present now, you have the state media, which has to give equal time to either side, but you have the right wing media, which of course amplifies the right wing and just lambasts the left. And when it comes to comedy, I just wanted to mention a thing about comedy. Comedy seems to be stuck in the 1970s here in Italy. There is political satire, but generally comedy is really, really stuff you'd see like Carry On. You could almost compare
Really?
it to the Carry On movies of the 1970s. Very like a lot of
Wow.
sexist stuff and a lot of like slapstick and if there's anyone from Italy watching this, they're probably criticizing me about this and rightly so. But I don't really watch a lot of Italian comedy, but I don't really get it. It doesn't seem to be. It's not my cup of tea anyway. But back to the politics. It's what they do is. Like in the UK, where you have the right-wing media who will say that the right are doing everything really well and don't dare vote for the left because they will trash everything. And there used to be the communist versus everyone else. So Berlusconi was able to convince people they had to hate communists, and anyone who was on the left of Berlusconi was a communist, even though people didn't know what a communist actually was. But it sort of predates the woke sort of stuff. So the way the like I've asked people here in Italy, do you know what woke is? And they've never heard of the term. So that's somewhat fortunate because of course it has been weaponized in the US and in the UK. I don't know about in France, but especially in the UK, where people who vote for reform or the conservatives would say, well, I'm going to vote for the conservatives or reform because they're not woke, because Keir Starmer is woke. And then if you ask, well, what does woke mean? They'll be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's stuff I don't like. And that's
Cultural
it.
appropriation.
But it's a failure of the media to actually explain things and to critically apply critical thinking to things and to challenge politicians when they come up with stuff like that.
I always think like with the woke thing, it's sort of the other side of the coin to what we were tapping into earlier about sort of free speech ultras, until the point that reality comes knocking, right? So with the woke stuff, they're like, well, we're the Tories, we're not woke, you should vote for us because we're not going to hire a load of diversity champions, or we're not all about that inclusivity stuff. We don't believe in institutional racism, et cetera, if you're somebody like Kemi Badenoch. But actually, reality comes knocking on stuff like that too. Like it doesn't matter if they don't like the idea of diversity champions in something like the civil service or even the Conservative Party. Like, the Conservative Party, as an employer, will have to guard itself against being taken to court in tribunals by people of color, by people of a certain age. And they will have to show that court or that magistrate or whatever that they've taken all the necessary steps that they possibly could have done to ensure that that person felt welcome and that they were treated equally to everyone else. And one of the first things that you would do as a responsible employer would be train your staff on equality. On some of this stuff, so they can say, "Oh, we're not woke because we disparage these various initiatives," but all they're doing is leaving themselves wide open to either being sued in the absence of these initiatives, or being, lambasted for being hypocrites. It's like, "Oh, we're down with that. There's too many diversity champions in the civil service." Well, you've got them as well. You know what I
Well,
mean?
I don't know if people heard about I think it was during the time of the gender neutral bathrooms that GB News was banging on about it for weeks. And it turned out that they actually have a gender neutral bathroom in their studio.
Yeah, of course they do.
But don't worry. When Nigel Farage is the Prime Minister, he's going to ban trans ideology as
Yeah.
if it's like an idea, you know? Just can't be. It was
And
an
it's
idea.
no
It was
different to
people
how they
watch
were
things.
treating homosexuals in the 80s. Identical. There's an interesting thing with the term woke. I mean, the original origins is the 60s. It's American, and it was to be awake to racism.
Also,
and they've converted that word. And the interesting thing is, part of that, according to Noam Chomsky, is that it was a far-right leader, I think a KK leader, who came out and publicly said, I'm going to work to change the word woke and reverse it, which the right do in general. I mean, historically, the right seem to get into power. And they've worked to change that word in a way that is a negative. I suppose, and it's interesting because when you ask people what it actually means, they haven't got a clue. So they're literally taking influence from a far-right leader, I think a KKK leader, which is fascinating. But I bet you a bottom dollar they wouldn't have a clue that someone for the far right has actively worked to change that word because they didn't like the emphasis of being awake to racism.
I was just going to say, like, you know quite a lot about the background of the word woke. And earlier you were talking about, like, Hitler and European history and stuff. I just wondered, like, this obviously areas of interest. Have you considered becoming a historian, Alex?
Do you want to see all my books? Is this how we plug? I mean, we're not a show that plugs products at all. there's so much to actually, you've all beautifully added to the segue. So we'll go back to Lee Anderson, who you were talking about universities and how some parents are freaking out about their kids going there and change their mind. Do you remember how Lee Anderson freaked out? I thought he was going to say that his son came out because the way he was reacting on TV, but it turned out it was about veganism.
Yeah.
He thought his son had like some head.
Oh, that video. Oh, God. Yeah, that was funny.
That was hilarious. But we were talking to, but so that segues nicely into into the Reform Party.
To be
but
fair,
the other segue. Go on.
To be fair to him, his delivery was pretty dry. That was good.
there was so much of an anticlimax.
It was.
But linking that in with the conspiracies, I mean, Nigel Farage is a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, God.
If you really, but no one talks about
just
him
just
like
as
that.
You said that. Can I just highlight one thing? This week, made my fool of the week. If you want to see my fool of the week this week, but it was a bit of a plug there. But there was a candidate for Reform UK who criticised the Labour Party for dragging Britain into the Afghan war, and she criticised the Conservative Party for dragging Britain into the Falklands War.
Oh my word! Well, you've beautifully added to it because Ty Scott ripped apart by Ferrari because Ferrari's researcher found four of the candidates were full on conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. So there was climate change, there was shouldn't have gone into World War One and World War Two. It turns out I think there's a claim of 41 the reformers being linked to a neo-Nazi group through Facebook. You heard this?
I read something about a reform candidate who'd said, like, Hitler was right or we shouldn't mm-hmm. have. Is that the same guy, right?
Is it the same person who said that?
Should have been neutral.
Women are sponges. Is it the same person? Women are sponges and just they kind of just latch onto the men.
And somebody, was it the same guy who criticised Churchill for being limp or something?
Isn't it?
A weak.
He was useless.
I mean, they certainly seem to attract a certain kind of political fan, don't they? It's the question I think James O'Brien asked yesterday. He was like, you know, the question really here is, what is it about reform that makes these people feel so welcome and so home there? Which, you know, to expand on that, they style themselves. They dismiss any suggestion that they might have a racism problem, right? They say they're centre-right fiscally, they're not far-right, don't call us far-right. Well, okay, well, why are all of these flag-waving lunatics and neo-Nazi sympathizers and, you know, people who say Hitler was right, why are they flocking to you? Like, what do they get out of center-right fiscal policy?
But apart from that, they have a good vetting process to keep these people out, don't they?
Oh, he paid 144,000
yeah
to a vetting company. Oh, we're gonna sue them, we want our money back.
Yeah. Did you see the lady that shared the tweet where it's the terms and conditions of that company, and it's basically them saying, we don't vet candidates for you, you pay us and we give you the software and then you go away and vet your own candidates.
I didn't know, like, that. That's hilarious.
They paid £100,000. Well, that's the vetting taken care of. And then they're like, no, you do it. Oh, I can't believe they didn't vet it.
But think about it from a logical point of view. Like, how would a company vet candidates for a political party when it's the political party that decide Like the political party would have to decide on an individual basis. A company, an outsourcing company, couldn't do that. They wouldn't be able to say, okay, because a political party would have to say, okay, well, this person is borderline. Do we go with them or not? Yeah, let's go with them because, you know, of what they can bring on board. We can manage the problems. Yeah. That would have to be the company. You couldn't have a company do that. That would have to be the party. You couldn't have a company do that. It's just the whole idea of outsourcing is just ridiculous.
It's nice. But when you got, the thing is, some prime candidates within the Reform Party, they are so extreme. Like Benabib, for instance, he's quite happy with people to be drowned in the channel, isn't he? And then the idea that we can just, they stick them all in boats and send them back to France as though,
isn't it funny that they're celebrating the idea of Marie Le Pen becoming next prime minister? And they think, wouldn't it be great? The far right in Britain are like, it'd be great if Marie Le Pen becomes prime minister. But she'd be the opposite of she'd be more about sending people to the UK, not taking them back.
As long as they don't do what they've been doing.
Okay, so Nick Ferrari got his researcher in an hour to find found that one candidate didn't believe in climate change and it was a conspiracy, and that anyone who thought it was a conspiracy is an idiot, which would be Richard Tice, because he believes that it exists, but it's not a crisis.
You mean it didn't suit him? It doesn't suit Richard Tice. Of course he's going to be against it, isn't he?
I thought you said sleep with him.
Oh, no, no, what?
What?
What? Oh, what? Not for me, thank you.
They found another one that was a flat earther.
Yeah.
Which is just like, wow. Another one that thought COVID
global trade
wasn't real and it was created by a big pharma. And then another one, as you said earlier, that World War II and Churchill was a moron and World War I shouldn't have got involved and we should have stayed neutral.
Accepted his offer of neutrality. Hitler's offer of neutrality.
Except we had an agreement with Belgium that we would defend them if they were invaded.
Yeah.
So that would mean we'd have to breach a treaty, which these guys seem to love for us to do. They love the idea of
breaching
international
treaties. But there is no neutrality. That's right. And there is no neutrality anyway. You know, once they get their foothold, say for in Europe, it's still in Europe, but they'd be come across the channel. But you know, and also you think of Putin as well. It's the same argument, isn't it? You know, if he takes some Ukraine, what about Poland and Estonia?
Yeah,
it goes on and on and on, doesn't it?
So it's always this thing with them of don't spend any money on it and it won't be a problem. That seems to be their ethos, even with tax. Don't spend any money on it. It won't be a problem.
Yeah, no, but we don't know what the problem is, because at the end of the day, we can just prosecute the Royal National Lifeboat Institution for people trafficking, according to Nigel Farage.
That was something else he suggested.
Yeah, that's why he put it on his Twitter. So the Royal National Lifeboat Institution is just financed a new boat.
Let's sue him.
It's like listening to press releases from just like a collection of ids, you know, like no pragmatism, no thinking about how is this going to work, the complexities and the nuances. It's just hateful instinct. Just prosecute the lifeboats. Just pull us out the ECHR. It'll be fine. But just stop paying the interest on the bank loans. Ah, it'll be okay.
But the thing it is really scary, though. People are willing to vote for them. And what does it say about those people?
I did a whole thing about this the other night on my pod about basically what they've learned, these people. They're salesmen, really, in essence. And what they've learned is that everyday people are, you know, they're busy. They're not news junkies. They don't obsess over news and politics the way that maybe we do. They've just got enough time to walk in the 24-hour garage, cast a glance over whatever is on the front page of the newspaper.
I used to be in that boat.
Didn't we all, right? Before Brexit.
Exactly.
And they see big black and white letters on the front page of the Mail or the Express or the Sun saying something hateful in like four words. And that's enough. They're loosely aware of what's happening there and who they should be angry at. And what they've learned, these guys, and this is true of the Sewellian right of the Tory party, but it's also obviously true of Reform. What they've learned is that the racism is like the cell. The racism, the hate is the billboard. That's what they lure you in with.
Mm.
And actually the goal, like the actual thing that they're trying to implement, is trashing of workers' rights, taxing corporate tax, no more taxes for the super wealthy, sell off all the assets, NHS hospitals, social care homes, all of that will go to the UK equivalent of like oligarchs. That's the actual prize that they want to get to. But they can't sell that to you in a way that makes sense to you. And so what do? They go, look over there's a boat. Be angry at the boat. You know?
I love the analogy of the billboard. I sometimes refer to it as a train. It's like the train is the racism, or the train is the racism, and the destination is tax cuts for the rich and selling off public assets and getting rid of people's protections and rights and stuff like that. And when they talk about leaving the European Convention on Human Rights, it's not nothing to do about immigration. They don't care about immigration. It's about stripping away protections for British people, because if you want to take a company to court and you're not successful in the British Supreme Court, well, there's a higher level you can go to. And some companies would like that protection, that higher level, to be taken away.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I said the other day, I was like, racism is the titty dance, right? That Farage lures you into the strip club with. But the actual way,
A horrible image in my mind.
the end, the end game is, trashing workers' rights and making your life immeasurably harder. So you leave the strip club with full balls and an empty wallet, and that's the con, isn't it?
That's a horrible, horrible image that you've created
That
there.
is an awful analogy. It's
I'm
just like,
introducing
wow.
people. Anyone that's watching this that hasn't caught up with any of my stuff now, this is what I
All
do. It's
in shock.
disgusting metaphors.
Were
This
you
is
say
my shtick.
Suella? Did you just say Suella or something a minute ago?
Suellian, Suellian
Orwellian,
rights. Yeah.
Suellian.
I'll have to remember.
I'm gonna ask a set of questions to you, but I'll just end up on this. If Nick Ferrari had a researcher and managed to find all of that in an hour, those four people, and Richard Tice spent 144,000 and didn't find any, that means I could have probably hired three out of university graduates, 2 grand a pop, 6K total for the month to research. And they didn't think of that. Instead, they forked out 144 grand
I wonder if
for a
it's.
thing that doesn't do anything. They're so fucking useless. They're so fucking stupid. It's unreal. And people still want to vote for them. And they're
Wonder if he's
still
got
out
shares in
there.
it.
They're so dumb. They're so stupid. They're the
Maybe it's run by
stupidest people I've
Circle.
ever heard
We're
of.
like.
And they claim they're all for business. And they couldn't figure out you could have just hired some university graduates for 6K and you would have got better work than
Or even
144.
interns for free.
Doubt many university students would go near him. They're scum.
Well, that's what they did with the Leave campaign, isn't it? They got them
Yeah.
involved.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? Yeah, they got them in for, well, I think they were paid, weren't they?
Yeah, well, yeah, they were, but it's just like the it was Andy. No, I can't say it on there, can
Yeah. And then a lot of those interns came out and said how corrupt the entire organization was and that they regretted working for
Yeah,
them.
no. It was like the people who were voting for Cambridge Analytica, and like the whistleblowers, what have you,
Wiley.
Wiley, yeah, Wiley, and the other one who was bullied, the gay guy, what's his name again? Oh, crikey! They basically they were like partner, not partner, not physical partners, but partners within the Cambridge
Organization,
Analytica,
yeah.
and they worked together basically, and they both came out regarding.
Of all the manifestos, which one really grabs your vote? And there's no consequence to that vote. It doesn't mean that that party will get in or anything else. You could just vote freely. Without consequence, you're not worried about letting the Tories in by this vote. Which
I know
manifesto
this one.
grabbed you enough for that vote? Oh, all shorts, go
Count Binface.
on.
No, he got me. He got me when he told us all that he would have a gangplank from Westminster. So when these politicians lie in the House of Commons, they have to walk the plank into the Thames, which is full of shit, by the way. Anyway, that sold me. Yeah, that's it. Count Binface all the way. At the moment, none of them really. It all be said. None of them really actually tick all my boxes. But there again, it's always a compromise, isn't it? Personally, I would like to vote Green, but I'm gonna have to tactically vote. I'm gonna be voting Labour because it's the only opposition to the Tories in the Broadland area, and they've got quite a hold there. So it makes sense for me to vote Labour. Otherwise, I'd probably be voting Greens as long as they don't support.
What do you like about the Green Party manifesto?
They've got it's just direction. They've got a direction. Regarding green policies across the whole, but we need to spend money. We need a green economy. And that's what really let me down with Labour, is when they started pulling back from that 28 billion. I understand where, where we're going to get the money from, but that is the, I don't even realize this, the biggest chunk of potential business for the world is in the green economy. It's huge. It's bigger than the entire economy for the world. Now, we've got a national debt of the world at the moment, which is like 315 trillion, you know? And yet the planet only makes about 65 or 70 odd trillion. You know, how are we going to sort? Because we're a world economy after all, it's not just about the UK. And so why not embrace the green economy? You know,
Money to be
even
made.
Nigel Farage is pulling away from, oh, Nigel Farage, no. Vladimir Putin is pulling away from oil because all these sanctions. His latest thing,
Easy,
his
easy.
latest thing, his latest thing is flipping fertilizer.
Freudian slip.
It was a little bit, wasn't it? Oh, I
The
wish
head
Putin
of
would
Russia, Nigel
stand.
Farage. We're going to get sued for libel. We've really thrown a load of people under that red bus.
Anyway,
Sorry.
fertilizer.
Aid, which policy, which manifesto jumps out at you?
Sorry.
I'm going to also go with Greens, and I guess this sort of taps into a feeling or a report I read last week where it was like, this is how people are polled to be voting. And then the second one was like, this is what people would vote for if they were sure that their votes were going to count, like in a proportional representation kind of setup. And the Greens were faring significantly better on in the latter.
Well, it's a lot more
And
sensible, isn't it, really? Crikey.
yeah, I think everybody understands and accepts that we do need to move into a greener economy. People know that fossil fuels are in the past or should be, and that solar panels, wind farms, renewables, that's where everything's
That's
headed.
how we
Like,
power our house here.
yeah, and it's, well, a lot of people are making that shift already, right? And businesses are as well. It just seems to be the politicians, and I would never wish to cast aspersions on them and suggest that they are corrupt and in hock with big oil and big gas. I mean,
Of course not. Ugh.
heaven forbid. But it seems to be the politics that slows this transition down. I mean,
Oh,
like,
most
you've even
definitely.
got you've got people like Rishi Sunak, for example, who at the beginning of his premiership, or even in the leadership hustings from memory now, he was talking about how he's committed to net zero to take that baton from ostensibly from Boris Johnson, that we didn't have anything to worry about. He had two committed environmentalist daughters at home that he wanted to bequeath a healthy planet to, et cetera, et cetera. And even he is like, in the blink of an eye, signing off 300 oil exploration licenses
He
in the
does
North
use his
Sea.
daughters quite a lot, don't he? Earlier, I heard him saying that his daughters are quite happy doing national service.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if they can do UK national service when they're in Silicon Valley, shall we?
Yeah. One.
I don't know.
For me, and then we'll get to Alex. But for me, the green manifesto, but not so much about the energy, and I agree completely with investing in green energy, but actually just funding public services because the last 14 years have been completely decimated. And I recommend people watch. It's about a 1 hour long podcast on Joe with a former advisor to Jeremy Corbyn. Now, don't let that put you off, okay? But he explains in very, very clear detail about how you need to fund public services. And even the 2019 manifesto was basic, and it was shot down. But this one from the Green Party, he said, is the one that really needs to be implemented, because the one that from the Labour Party at the moment would increase borrowing by about, or increase spending by about £8 billion, which sounds a lot of money, but in reality it doesn't even touch the sides. You need massive investment. Even if all of that was put into the NHS, it wouldn't touch the edges. What needs to happen, like after a war, you need to start rebuilding and you need to borrow huge amounts of money. You need to invest. And unfortunately, I think this isn't going to happen under the Labour government. And what it'll do is it'll open the doors for the likes of Farage to come in. So I think, well, Labour are saying we can't borrow, we can't spend too much because the economy is in the doldrums or is a disaster. You have to actually go in the opposite direction.
Isn't
Anyway,
it
Alex,
interesting?
for you, which of them grabbed your attention?
I'd say if it was going to go anywhere for the simplest manifesto, I'd still go rejoin EU. That would have an effect on everything. So like I've been running the calculations on it. I reckon we're talking about 500 billion to a trillion to do infrastructure projects and research projects, science projects, green projects to get us back to where we were in 2016, and it will take 10 years to do that.
I bet it's double that.
It could be double, yeah. I'm going on best case scenario, economy stable, everything starts to calm down, blah, 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 which I don't think is going to happen. I mean, as we've all said, climate change is getting worse. It's not getting better. We're not pulling our thumbs out to fix it. There's no big, you know, why are we... China's doing this. China's actually greening the Mongolian desert right now. They're planting trees in there. Why aren't we doing that with the Sahara and shrinking
But
it?
Also, China's actually has just built the largest, it went online 2 weeks ago, the largest solar array in the world. It's the size of Texas.
They're not messing around. I know they're building the coal plants and it's not good, but my understanding, and again, you take everything they say with a pinch of salt, my understanding is they're doing it as a backup procedure, just to make ends meet until they get the green power back up online. And it's insured power. Though, you know, it's interesting to see that. That's quite incredible. If it's going away from the majority party, I mean, out of all the manifestos that are going to work, it'd either be Green or Labour. But that's to fix a problem that we've created that we have to continue going through, which no one wants. I mean, there was a poll out last week, 75% want to rejoin.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I mean, those two seem like economically the most sensible if you're going to continue Brexit. But the actual point of view here is not to continue Brexit because it is an absolute
absolute disaster. It's just a timescale. But this is the first time you've had anyone on here has actually mentioned Brexit apart from the introduction. It's like we've been conditioned by the media. Yes.
I'll say this as well today. I know that a lot of the fruit and veg guys sell fruit and veg by the outdoors, not in the supermarket. And I was talking about the prices that they're paying. They're saying this is meant to be the cheapest point of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, like, let's say you go and get a pallet of a box of peppers would normally cost at this time of year about £1. And they're now saying it's £5.
Really?
They were saying for a pallet of potatoes, that would be £1. They're now saying it's £8. So they're telling me that they can't sell for profit. They're just making margin.
Yeah, right. Just to make sure they're covering everything, so it's like the lost leader. But
and we're being told that we're meant to continue this.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Well, like, for instance, what's happened recently, regarding, we don't know yet where that lettuce came from that's been given people E. coli. We don't know if it's been it's imported lettuce from the Netherlands, for instance, or whether it's locally produced lettuce that's been washed in poo. But we don't actually know. Sorry. We don't know yet, do we? But either way, you see, in both cases, it's affected by Brexit. Like, for instance, the farmers now in the UK, there's no restrictions on them entering their sheds. So over the winter period, the cows go into the sheds, they create a huge amount of cow pats. They all have to get rid of them and they all end up on the fields and spread onto the fields, don't they, you know? But it's restricted while you're in the EU. They can only do a certain amount. And the problem is that, obviously... if you do too much, it's the pathogens and what have you, they don't break down fast enough. It just causes all sorts of problems. So that could be a problem regarding the so-called lettuce, if it's UK lettuce. But equally, potentially you've got lettuce coming in from the Netherlands, taking too long to get over the border. It could be sitting there in car parks for 20-odd hours. Not refrigerated either, just sitting in these crates in just trucks.
Festering.
How long do you think it'll be before the Brexit lot start marketing, like, do you remember those old, like, wartime posters, like Dig for Britain, like Plant Your Own Veg? And it's like, it ticks every box, doesn't it? It's like it'd be Brexit,
a ration app,
flags, wartime. It's going to happen.
Well, I've got Spitfires above and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
Hurricanes on Lancaster.
I wouldn't be surprised if they would try and run it, but how does it appeal to somebody who lives on the 11th floor of a tower block? I don't know.
Yeah,
unless they bring back allotments as well, but then people don't have time.
I'm all for growing food.
Jobs, how are you going to grow vegetables?
Yeah, but the problem is, but not everyone. But you see, where I live in France, it's very much a community basis regarding regarding the gardens. Like, for instance, we might grow stuff here, and you can share it with somebody else, and they grow something and share something with you. But they might be good at growing, I don't know, spuds, for argument's sake. We might be good at cauliflowers, and then you just have that bartering going on. That seems to be lost in the UK. And I can remember my grandfather in the olden days. That's what he used to do, you know. And he was very much for the vote for the common market and all that. But it's that community spirit of people, but people becoming more and more disengaged with each other. You know, like my son used to live in a place called Marlborough Road in Norwich for several years and had never ever spoke to their neighbour. So that
We're the
community's been lost. It's just go it's just dissipating, it's going.
we're
And
the
I think
same
that's all.
here.
Yeah.
Like, are we?
Social
So we're on a,
media.
yeah,
Yeah,
like we're on a strip.
definitely. We've
We've
been in
got
a
like
bubble.
older people living either side of us. And I say like what's up and everything, but like it's not. I know what you mean. Like that sort of where your neighbours were almost like your family, and you'd pop round to each other's, have a cup of tea, catch up. I don't think that happens anymore. Might be a bit
No, I
to do
don't.
with social media. You're right.
Yeah, when we come home sometimes and during the summer, since you know, like in the glut of the season, we might find a bag of beans on the door handle or something. You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. It's just this kind of social currency. These are French, not English, you know, and you kind of have this engagement. We do the same for them, so you sort of help each other out. And I think that is becoming lost. And there's such a division there as well. You know, you got obviously the right-wing parties. They're breaking down any cohesion we had with each other, where we might have an agreeable disagreement. That these days it's just anger, but loggerheads, and it's this clear wall in between. And I think it's really sad, you know. And
Those divisions being created by all the populace.
yeah, it is, yeah, definitely.
That's the thing. Like, we've got more, like, I've heard plumbers, construction workers say I've got more in common with the migrant coming over or the refugee coming over in the boat than I do with Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
But Nigel Farage keeps telling everyone that he's man of the people, and yet he's a kept man. He's got a chauffeur, he's got a
He went to
bodyguard,
a
he's
private
kept
school
house.
and he worked in the city.
The thing that I remind myself whenever I see anyone being like rabidly supportive of him is that, like, if it's a flag waving flag emoji account on Twitter, or if it's some vox pop on the news, I'm always like, I mean, there is an element of Schadenfreude to this where it's like I enjoy seeing them love him and adore him that much when I know, we know, if Donald Trump picked up the phone tomorrow and offered him that job, like in DC in
Goodbye.
November, he would drop us like flies. Like if that, it wouldn't even be, he wouldn't even have to consider it. It'd be like, yeah, I'll take it. So it's,
They
it's
would
tragic,
actually
isn't it?
cheer
That
him on. They would actually say, yeah, it's a great thing that he's going there because he'll have influence in, for Britain or for Clacton. He can fight Clacton's corner on the world stage.
yeah, you're probably right.
Do
Well,
you think
as we
what gained all that rapid popularity while he was on GB News? Do you think it's when he took his shirt off to write Said Fred?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. I
Did you
forgot,
do
or I wiped it from my memory either.
that? I had wiped it, but now it's been reinstalled.
Yeah. If that's what it takes to gain your popularity, and if I can't sue anyone for libel just yet, well, my Patreons, guys. It's a tough market out there. Got to
You'll have
pay
to watch
this mortgage.
my woodworking channel if you'll see mine.
I have threatened to set up an OnlyFans if people don't join my Patreon. So if
Yeah. Still waiting for your mankini, Max.
I told my Twitter, like, here's the first tier that just shows that you're supportive of what I do. Here's the second tier that gets you access to the Discord. Here's the third tier that gets you like in-person meetups and everything. And then there's a fourth tier, which you DM me about, which is where you pay me £5,000 and I will just shut the fuck up for a bit.
Just on a final note, because Trump got brought up, are you all aware that he's been pulled up in the Epstein case again? Six court documents have cited that John Doe 174 is Donald Trump.
Wasn't really aware of it, but I did catch an interview, a very awkward exchange in an interview that he did about 3 or 4 weeks ago, where he was talking about the need for government transparency and the people have a right to know what's being kept secret from them, from the CIA and all of this other stuff. It really feeds into that whole conspiracy theory, MAGA, anti-vax kind of those quarters. And this Fox News host said to him, like, so you would declassify the files about JFK? He was JFK, sorry. He was like, yes, absolutely. And they said, you would declassify the files about the origins of COVID and all that. He was like, yes, absolutely, I would. And then they were like, and you would declassify the files that show who was present on Epstein's island? And then he was like, well, I'd have to look into that. And I was like, oh, it's delicious. There's something to it all. And now you're telling me about this. I'm like, ah, here we go.
Here we
Strap
go.
in.
Yeah, don't want to show him connected too much to that, does he? I
Oh,
think
and
that's why Farage bailed. I think that he must have got wind of that, and that's why he
You think?
failed. He was just like, your campaign's screwed if you're really fully associated with Epstein.
Well, I want to see these videos that Maxwell said there was. You know, these
Yeah.
secret videos that Epstein apparently was.
And the models. One
And the
model claims that
models.
they've got it. She's a model
Oh.
now. She went on the island. She claims she's got the video footage. She kept them. And she
Really?
hasn't released them. And we don't. It's a curious one, but I'm sure she'll disappear in a bike accident or something in the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it does tend to happen with a lot of these people. Anyway, on that cheerful note, bye everyone.
Bye bye.
Bye
Bye
bye.
Be sure to tune in next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.